Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Kathy Cale. I'm standing in for Howard Feldman. Now, yesterday I started reporting on a story about what's been happening in the DRC, right? So South Africa's soldier was killed and another injured after a helicopter came under fire in the DRC. And I was thinking, the DRC, why are we still in the DRC? You know, this is something that really, until there's an incident, we don't really talk about, because all the conversation is monopolized by Eskom and service delivery failures. So let's find out, what are we still doing in the DRC and how long do we anticipate we will be there? So we called up military expert Helmut Roma Heitman. Morning, Helmut. How are you?
Morning. A bit early in the week, but so far so good.
It's only Tuesday. Give it half a chance, apparently.
Yeah.
Why is the SANDF in the DRC? How long have we been there?
Look, we've been there in one way or another since about 2001.
Okay.
And it's been gradually built up over time. Initially, it was a smallish technical team. Then it became infantry battalion, and we added helicopters. Now we've added the reaction force. I think the why is, has sort of multiple answers. One is, of course, the DRC is part of the SADC. So right. We should be helping a fellow SADC country stabilize itself and its border areas. Another aspect is, you know, we really don't need more instability, shall we say, in the region. There's a lot of instability in Africa north of the SADC. SADC, so far, it's really a matter of the DRC that is badly unstable and now Mozambique. We don't need it to spread. If the DRC implodes totally, now, I know that the moment the conflict we read about is in the east, but Kasai and Katanga aren't that stable either. They, in fact, implode totally. Then there will be conflicts spill over into Angola, into Zambia, into Tanzania, which, again, we don't really need. Then there is the issue, if South Africa wants to be taken seriously in Africa and internationally as an actor, we sort of have to pay our dues. We have to pay our school fees. As it is, we do far less in terms of stabilization, peacekeeping in Africa, relative to the size of our country, relative to the size of our economy, than a lot of other African countries. If you do a pie chart, in fact, we just about are invisible, so small. So that becomes a little bit embarrassing. But there is another unexpected wrinkle that I only discovered a few years back. The Defense Decision Support Institute had an analysis done by some econometric types, and they looked at our trade with the DRC, exports to the DRC. They sustained, if I recall correctly, something like Africa. And the revenue take that...
Oh, no, hold on. Helmut, we lost that. As you were going to tell us what their findings were, we lost signal. Okay, so can I ask you please just to repeat that?
Okay, so the Defense Decision Support Institute had an analysis done by economics experts.
Yes.
That exports to the DRC sustained something like 300,000 jobs in South Africa.
Wow.
And the tax take on those exports, you know, the income tax, the employees and the company tax and whatever,
yep,
as far as it gets out of the exports to the DRC is substantial. I don't remember the number off the top of my head. What I do remember is that the amount of money SARS takes in taxes on exports to the DRC was substantially more than it costs the Defense Force to maintain 4 infantry battalions and 2 helicopter squadrons to be able to rotate troops through the DRC.
That's crazy.
So at that level, actually, South Africa, while limited, could almost be certainly making a profit on this.
Yeah. Helmut, why is there such instability?
We need a stable area around us.
Okay, so why is there such instability in the DRC?
Oh, well, first of all, politically incorrect, the DRC probably shouldn't be a single country.
Yes.
It is much too large, much too diverse. Under President Mobutu, he specifically kept the region separate so they couldn't unite against him, and that sort of built in. Then there's considerable, call it ethnic, I suppose, overlap between various, among the countries in the east. There are people in the DRC who are ethnically related to those in Burundi, Uganda, Rwanda, and further south down to Tanzania as well, which also creates a problem. Then there's the history of insurgency in the east of the DRC. You know, there was insurgency within the Congo. There was the genocide in Rwanda. There was very related, similar conflict in Burundi. There's been insurgency and terrorism in Uganda for years, and a lot of those were operating out of the DRC. Because the Zaire, as it earlier was, and later the DRC, either didn't have the military clout to do anything to suppress it, or he wasn't very interested. Now, if you jump to today's times, if you look at the size of the area, the Monusco force is simply too small and too ill-equipped to do the job. There were nearly enough air support, there were nearly enough in the way of reconnaissance sensors, and plenty of enough hoops. The other factor, a lot of people are making a lot of money out of illegal mining, logging, poaching, etc. in the east of the DRC.
Yeah.
I suspect elements of the government, the various governments also involved. So the only people who really want peace and stability there are the ordinary people who live there. And let's be blunt, if you get up to the high finance and political circles, who cares about the ordinary people anyway? So I don't think anybody really wants peace there except the guy down the road.
That's crazy.
And the UN, and for that matter, the AU, are not really serious enough about these things. We see it too with the totally inadequate effort in Cabo Delgado and Mozambique. The force the SADC has put in there is patently incapable of stabilizing there. It's much too small, much too lightly equipped. Mm-hmm. We don't take it seriously, and it drags on forever. And the Eastern DRC isn't going to stabilize anytime soon.
You know what worries me about this conversation, Helmut, is that, you know, we've been following over the past, I'd say, maybe 10 years, this extremist, the growth of extremism and fundamentalism in Africa. When ISIS went into Iraq, they went into failed states and they took over the electricity supply and which the government was failing to do, and they took over the water supply, which the government was failing to do. And it's all very nice that South Africa's taking army, the SANDF, and we're sending it off to the DRC to keep it stable. But a failed state is a failed state, and a corruption is a cancer that fails states. And it's so concerning what you're saying, because I'm hearing a different conversation reading between the lines.
Look, yeah, I mean, I think that I take a step back. Remember that Africa only gained independence after the colonial era from 1950 onwards, from the 50s on. Now consider what Europe went through after the Roman Empire imploded. We've actually done a lot better than Europe did.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it when we're here living in it. But we haven't gone through all the multiple wars, the 30 years, more than 100 years, all this, World War I, World War II, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which they went through to stabilize.
Right.
So I look around Africa, I see a lot of very capable people, but unfortunately, very rarely do they seem to get into key positions in government. In fact, there's a very weird thing. If you look at Africa, we produce some pretty successful businessmen around the country. Well, businessmen, businesswomen. I have dealings, certainly from the mid-90s on for about a decade. I had quite a lot of dealings with military personnel, officers from other SADC armed forces, and a few others from the field, like Nigeria, Ghana, and so. And I found that, in fact, Africa produces some very serious soldiers. Why do we seem incapable of producing serious politicians? It's been a question that's niggled in the back of my mind for a long time. Now, why do we keep electing people who clearly don't give a damn about the country and the people or anything else? And it's not just South Africa. Look at some of the other countries around us.
Yeah,
well, not that European or United States politicians are paragons of virtue, but generally they at least appoint competent civil servants. And their civil service then runs the country almost despite the plot of the government.
Yeah,
they even seem to manage to do that.
It's interesting. Every country post-pandemic, you know, the pandemic, COVID-19, highlighted pre-existing conditions. Wasn't that what we were told? Right. So
yeah.
Post-COVID, post-pandemic world, we're looking around and we're seeing governments making themselves obsolete, the corruption that is now can no longer be hidden, and they're making themselves redundant. And I think globally it's creating a perfect storm, as every pandemic has. I'm not a prophet, but just looking at these things, you know, the every man is getting fed up. It's enough.
Yeah. The problem there is, I mean, you could even argue, for instance, that Italy has been running despite its government for the last since World War II. They keep changing governments. But the problem that is, I mean, yes, to an extent, we've got it in South Africa, electricity. I mean, I'm sitting with solar panels and a generator and a number of water tanks. Increasingly, people and other countries are doing it too. I mean, as you touched on, smaller communities, larger communities, these individuals tend to start looking after themselves. The problem with that is, if we gravitate away from the nation state as it sort of grew out of Europe, we get into a whole bunch of teeny-weeny states that's going to have more conflict.
Yeah.
Because group people are not very good at getting on with each other. So that's where the state is actually quite handy, because it tends to limit that. Okay, when it goes wrong, it goes wrong spectacularly.
Yeah.
But if you look at the graphs, the number of deaths to conflict over history, and it's actually been a remarkably stable period. And the most stable, funnily enough, in fact, the most economically successful period was the Cold War. Because you had, in the major countries, you had the full production, full employment of wartime without the destruction of wartime. The minute the Cold War ended, you had defense funding stopped. People were laid off, so armed forces reduced, more people laid off, you had a recession. Picked up after that again, always does. But it was quite a funny period there. It was actually the most economically successful period in recent times, which is not an argument for war.
Helmut, unfortunately, that is where we have to leave it. My producer's showing me his watch on his hand, and he's, you know, pointing at his watch saying, you have to wrap up. But he's so smart. Listen to him. We can talk to him for a long time. No, apparently we can't. I'm sorry, Helmut. Anyway, have a wonderful day, and thank you for your time and for sharing your expertise with us.
Anytime.
Thank you. That's Helmut Roma Heitmann. He's a military expert.